Thursday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. The Anaheim Ducks on their third game in four nights this week, continuing this Metropolitan Division swing. The Ducks tonight dodge a bullet up, or I believe they were up 3-1 at one point in tonight's game, eventually allow the Islanders to come all the way back and actually take the lead in the third period, 4-3. Ducks eventually tie the game back up and win it in overtime. We're going to get into some of that and then get some Twitter questions and some MixLR questions and whatever you have. You joined tonight by regular co-host slash guest slash Anaheim Calling staff writer slash rankings maker extraordinaire, Jake Woo-hoo! Rudolph. Jake,
hey,
you're back.
I've been promoted to co-host? Sweet.
Or I don't know. I just like just, whatever you want to call it.
Hey, you said it. I'm holding on to it now. You're stuck with it.
Hey, go for it. Go for it. I'm bestowing it upon you.
Thank you.
All right. So you're here. You're back. We got another game to talk about. It's been a busy week here at the pod, but it's been a it wasn't really looking like a fun week with the Ducks' recent slide, but tonight gave us something to at least a bit more of an entertaining game tonight. Ryan Getzlaf, really a dominant performance by him. 4 assists on the night. Also, Hampus Lindholm picking up a hat trick. I'm pretty sure when I said Hampus Lindholm, that probably wasn't the thing you were expecting me to say. Next, we actually have some fun little insight from Jake coming up. Let's just get into it now. Jake, you were actually at the last hat trick by a Ducks defenseman. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that game was a crazy game. It was way back, I believe, in 2011. Ducks were actually down 3-1 going to the third period. Vishnovsky had scored the only goal for the Ducks that game. Then Lubo scored 5 minutes into that game, I think, or 5 minutes into the third, and then sets up the game-tying goal from, I believe it was Teemu Selänne, none other than him, with a minute left in the game. And then this was way back when it was 4-on-4 overtime. And I believe this was also the very first season that they started using regulation and overtime wins as the tiebreaker, not just regulation wins, that Vishnovsky, with about 5 seconds left in overtime, scored for a hat trick. And it was insane. And then you add in the fact that it was counted as the tiebreaker. It was madness. It was one of the more fun games and fun memories that I have of regular season game.
That's actually pretty awesome, and that's kind of crazy to think that you were at the last one. Vishnovsky, by the way, one of the OG original Corsi gods, back when, you know, kind of hockey advanced stats was more in its infancy. Vishnovsky, I remember, was one of those guys that everyone would talk about as one of the better possession guys. Back when, you know, defensemen weren't necessarily evaluated by their effect on, you know, actual play. Yeah. And, you know, if you look at Vishnovsky's career 51.6 Corsi, but he had some ridiculous years. I mean, his final season with the Islanders had a 55.3, 56.7 one year, and then earlier in his career, 52.2. So anyway, Vishnovsky, good player.
Yeah.
Cool that you were there.
Watch.
Yeah. But to start off tonight's game, I mean, first goal of the night, the Ducks, with a really nice goal off the rush. Hampus Lindholm jumping up into the rush, which is something that you like to see if you're a Ducks fan. You know, because Lindholm is, for as great as he is defensively in his all-around game, he kind of leaves you wanting just a tad more offensively, and he really activated there and joined the play. Ryan Getzlaf on his offside as a righty just makes a beautiful move around the D-man and then holds on to it just long enough to thread the needle and put it perfectly on Andrew Cogliano's stick, and with Lindholm joining the rush, eventually goes off his skate. A lot of goals after that, but some of the more notable ones in my mind, I mean, John Tavares just so present on some of these New York Islanders goals, and also Hampus Lindholm, his second goal of the night, a slap shot from the point. Getzlaf wins the faceoff immediately back to Hampus Lindholm, who just, you know, tees one up and looks good for Lindholm, not so great for Yaroslav Halak, though.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think you and I were talking about before we started recording that's something Halak's got to have and take it, but not the best goal in the world by Halak.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, you know, I'm one of Yaroslav Halak's biggest fans, you know, growing up a Habs fan, and that amazing playoff run he had, you know, where the Canadians beat the Capitals, the Penguins, and then went on to lose to the Flyers. It was just really something else at the time. But, you know, now this season, Halak sporting a .905 save percentage for the Islanders, or at least going into tonight, .915 last season. So for as much as the Ducks lead, or I guess goals tonight, you know, some of them definitely strong plays, but Yaroslav Halak has really struggled this season. And to kind of just fast forward this thing, third period, Ducks down a goal, and they've kind of, once again, you know, same old story that we've been talking about all season, you know, just blowing a lead in that third period. The Ducks actually, with a pretty nice play, I mean, just so aggressive to try to tie the game back up. I really liked what I saw from Ryan Getzlaff, especially Raquel, Kasha. You could go down the list, just making a lot of nice plays in the neutral zone especially. And then eventually the Ducks do find a way to tie it back up. Ryan Getzlaff and Brandon Montour with a nice little exchange at the blue line. Montour gets a shot through, just blasts it, and the rebound pops right back out to Ricard Raquel, who's left all alone and buries it. Huge, huge goal for Anaheim. I mean, because to think about it, you look at the way they've been playing the third period and how they've been losing games because of it. You know, if they lose again tonight in similar fashion, you and I were talking about it during the game. It's like, man, are we just going to talk about the same thing again tonight? But I feel like
so
for
depressing
a team
at the time.
Exactly. And for a team like this that has struggled so mightily in this department, I think that was a huge mental hurdle that they may have overcome tonight.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's not a whole lot more to add on that. It's definitely hopefully going to be a confidence booster moving forward. I think overall the game wasn't too bad. The Ducks actually played pretty well if you're looking at the advanced stats. I think that if you're looking at just shot attempts, it's pretty good. Expected goals and chances probably aren't as good, but still definitely favor the Ducks. I think kind of bringing it down a little bit, this was a really good win, really good to come back. But blowing these third period leads is very, very frustrating to see. I think, and I actually, the article that I had been teasing earlier in the week about goaltending and how it's been a huge portion for this team and been a huge reason why they're in the spot they're in. And I think that this is kind of an example that if they get average to sub-average or to below-average goaltending, it's going to be hard for them to do anything in these games. And, I mean, tonight was kind of that. They had to really make a big push to get back in it after blowing a lead. So it was good. Not all positives, but a win's a win, and I'm happy with it at the end of the day, I guess.
Yeah, right. And I mean, like, it's like you said, if you dig into the numbers a little bit, I mean, the Ducks had one of their better games. And that's something
definitely.
That as much, and that's why, you know, you can't base everything you see just on what the goals are telling you. I mean, even though for Anaheim, the fact that they gave up that lead is certainly something that you don't want. This has to be looked at as one of their stronger games. And I mean, look, the Islanders are a team that, you know, fancies itself a cup contender. I would certainly agree with that. They've been that good. Obviously, maybe the goaltending has to be ironed out. But look, final high danger chances at 5-on-5, 15-7 for the Ducks. Scoring chances, 36-20. Shot attempts, 51-44. I mean, when's the last time the Ducks played this well against, you know, an actually good team?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it definitely has been a while. The Islanders are definitely a good team. It is interesting if you look. The Islanders made their push right before they scored the third and fourth goal, and the Ducks kind of controlled afterwards. So I may have been a little bit too harsh with what I was saying. This, I definitely do agree. This is probably one of the better games that they've had. And it happened when Miller had a below-average game, and so they picked him up. And I believe we had talked about it in the New Jersey game that you would like to see the team be able to pick up the goalie when he doesn't have his best game ever, and tonight they were able to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's actually really impressive to think that they played this well against a, you know, a really good team, and especially, you know, still missing Ryan Kesler and Corey Perry. I don't like to bring that up as much now just because, you know, we've talked about it so much this season.
Yeah.
So it's like it almost feels like a tired narrative, just like, yeah, despite the injuries. Like now the injuries are not nearly as bad as they once were, but
yeah,
you know, it's impressive for sure, though.
Well, and they've got Getzlaff back, who was the biggest piece they were missing. I mean, tonight was made that completely evident that he is just so good and makes the team infinitely better and infinitely more fun to watch.
I 100% agree with that. I mean, Ryan Getzlaff, out of Corey Perry and Ryan Kesler, and him out of that three, you know, as entertaining as Corey Perry can be, as, you know, sound as Ryan Kesler, and how you know, just physical it can be at times, there's no one that's more dominant of those three than Ryan Getzlaff. No. I mean, you saw tonight, just he just sees things in a different way that nobody else really can on this team.
Well, and if we want to transition to the overtime to briefly kind of
go
into there, Getzlaff just was a beast the entire time. And John Tavares is an insanely, insanely good player, and Getzlaff just made him look bad continually in overtime.
Yes. Well, let's just get right to it then. Getzlaff just, like you said, just making some just outstanding plays in overtime. I think highlighted by himself. the little bank pass off the wall, just going, and he made it look so easy too. Like, I mean, not a lot of guys will fall for that play, but he made it work. And then he just kind of patiently goes around the net, holds on to it. Cam Fowler smartly cuts to the slot and gets a nice chance. You know, it's funny because going to tonight, the Ducks struggles at the round three, well documented. And look, they had a practice supposedly where they worked on it. I'm not ready to just say, oh, great coaching job by Randy Carlyle, because they worked on it once after like a couple of years now being terrible at it. But I think what you can really attribute, you know, their success tonight at the round three is Ryan Getzlaff. And yeah, Getzlaff kind of just figured out, I'm just going to keep the puck. I'm just not going to pass it to anyone unless it's a scoring chance, basically.
No drop passes to the other team.
Yeah, exactly. So, and by the way, we saw Derek Grant in overtime a few times. So,
and of course, when Derek Grant's on the ice, there are chances against coming aplenty. And
Well, exactly. people are clamoring for, you know, they're like, oh, you got to give credit to Carlyle tonight. But it's like, well, he was still putting Derek Grant out there in overtime.
And I think the other thing that we can say about that is look at when the Ducks got their chances. And got shot attempts even probably in overtime. I can look into that to double check. But it seemed like the only time that they had any chances in 3-on-3 or any shots or anything, Getzlaff was on the ice. And that's not coaching.
Yeah.
That's not anything. That is one player who's amazing being on the ice. That is, to me, that unless we get a bigger sample size and other guys being on the ice when goals are scored, that's just Getzlaff doing Getzlaff things. And people deride him for and I even made the joke about him making the drop pass in overtime to the other.
Yeah, but that happened once, you know.
Yeah, honestly, you live with that because of this creativity and skill. Who knows? Maybe that pass bank or the pass off the boards trying to go around, I believe it was Tavares, doesn't work and it turns into something going the other way. And they end up scoring off it. Same exact type of thing happens. But it doesn't. He creates a glorious chance. And it's interesting. And I had sent out a tweet about this. Brian Hayward said on one of the rushes, speed is something that you definitely need in overtime, or speed is kind of what wins games in overtime.
Oh, yeah. That was awful.
And the funniest thing to me is that he said that, like, it must have been a minute or two after Getzlaff makes that play off the boards, and it's not like he even has a whole lot of speed when he does it. He really is kind of slow and flat-footed, but he just makes a really smart and skilled play, and that's kind of the clearest example I can give when all these, I mean, I've gone on rants on this podcast about Perry should be out there in overtime, and so many people try to tell me that he's just not fast enough, and speed doesn't matter. It's skill. It's being, the puck can move faster than you can skate. And the exact quote, I think, was speed is what does it in overtime.
From Brian Hayward. Too.
And it's just, it doesn't. It's not. Skill is what does it, and Getzlaff showed it there by, on leading up to the goal, just holding onto the puck, kind of being very methodical with what he was doing and looking for the breakdown and eventually finding it.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, let's just get right into it. The winning goal, you know, Ryan Getzlaff once again, you know, with that puck on his stick, makes a nice little kind of cutback. Oh, and I guess leading up to that, he's kind of going one-on-one against an Islanders defender, drags the puck between his skates to kind of get around him and create more space, sees that he's not going to get a clear lane to the net, so he just retreats back, cuts back, sees Hampus Lindholm kind of, you know, wide, not really wide open, but just kind of available as a passing option. And Getzlaff smartly just holds on to it like he did in that first goal, holds on to it ever so slightly for an extra second to get it over to him, just to kind of drag out that attention from the defense even more. And then Hampus Lindholm just kind of unexpectedly, I guess, also you have to note that the Islanders had been out there, their skaters had been out there for a while. And Lindholm just unleashes a wrist shot that he was kind of partially screened on. Halak was partially screened on, but probably a goal that Halak would like to have back. I don't think he saw Lindholm just willing to take that shot in that moment. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it. I'm not going to really add a whole lot more. It's a hat trick goal.
But the Ducks
game,
did play
game
well. If it had been that goal, I still think they would have probably won it because they were holding onto the puck very, very wisely during
that
whole time.
And speaking of Lindholm really quickly, I believe it's Benny in our writer's room chat brought up the fact that there were 20 scoring chances for with Lindholm on the ice tonight.
Mm-hmm.
That is insane.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, that just speaks to how good he is, though. I mean, like, when he's on his game, when he's pushing play, when he's actually involving himself offensively a little bit, like, he can, there's not really a whole lot that Hampus Lindholm can't do on the ice.
So, Lindholm, Raquel, and Getzlaf were all on the ice for 20 scoring chances for. Lindholm was on the ice for 10 against, Raquel on the ice for 6 against, Getzlaf on the ice for 8 against. This is actually an all situation. So if we go to 5-on-5, it's actually 15 for Lindholm and 9 against for Lindholm.
Still great.
And 12 for Raquel, 11 for Getzlaf. Like, these are all still insane numbers. Like,
yeah, they are. And like I said, you know, against a good team, against an actually good team that could be a contender for the cup. So that's extremely encouraging, you know. Yeah. And also, one kind of thing I wanted to note, if you look at the time on ice breakdown tonight, I think it's really interesting because, for me, the biggest storyline, or maybe not the biggest, but one of the biggest in the last few weeks for the Ducks, ever since the Vatanen trade, was how is this blue line going to look now that Vatanen is gone? And if you look at the minutes, it's interesting. Cam Fowler played nearly 27 minutes tonight, which is kind of incredible. They're still using him as a number one defenseman. And then Lindholm played almost 22 minutes. Manson played just about 19, and that's because Manson doesn't really play. He doesn't really play on the power play, and he's a penalty killer.
They didn't really play him in the last, like, basically 4 or 5 minutes of the game when they were searching for the goal for.
Exactly. And then Bieksa, Beauchemin, there's like a pretty clear like cutoff in terms of the minutes. And, you know, when I had wondered how they were going to do it, it's interesting. I mean, BX and Beauchemin had the least amount of ice time. Montour, Lindholm, and Fowler are the ones who seems to be way up there. And then Manson is kind of clearly like the number four in that in terms of minutes. So I guess maybe this is kind of how they're going to figure it out, is just they're going to find spots where they can, where they don't have to play Beauchemin and BX, and they're going to find spots where they feel okay kind of just throwing them out there. Because, I mean, even at 5-on-5, the cutoff is pretty clear, you know. So it's interesting, like, how they've had to get a little creative to accomplish that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
You want to do questions?
Sure, but one quick thing I want to mention is, I believe it was Brandon Montour tonight comes back in the lineup, leads the team in shot attempts. Shot attempts and shots on goals.
Isn't that great?
And individual scoring chances, he is second behind Lindholm with 4, Lindholm at 5.
That's incredible. So, that 2 D-men are up there. 3 D-men. Fowler was third tonight.
Fowler, yep. So, crazy.
Yeah,
all right,
that's incredible.
Let's get into some questions. And anyone, we have 6 people currently in the Mixler chat. If you have any questions or any topics or anything like that you want us to hit on, feel free to jump into the Mixler chat. This is kind of why we put it on here. It's fun. It's entertaining for us to interact and see you guys kind of talk to us real time as we're doing this. So, you have anything to add to that, or you want to get into the first question?
I will co-sign everything you just said.
Perfect. here's a question. It's from Georgie Kahn at the GC Ducks fan. Do you think the team have stopped listening to RC?
Well, I guess that would make him look better right now.
Yeah.
It's like, well, he can kind of absolve himself of some of their issues.
But then again, they've been playing well, or they played well tonight, and they actually didn't play too bad against the Rangers either.
Exactly. I honestly think that is a big product of having Ryan Getzlaf back.
Yep, I agree.
I also think Kasha being back is a huge thing that kind of is flying under the radar a little bit. I think that if you look at Kasha's numbers, or if you look at Nick Ritchie's numbers, he is always great next to Kasha. And he's been very good with next to Kasha since he's come back. So I think, anyway, to the actual question, I have no idea. I have no way of knowing, and I wouldn't, like, even if I didn't know, I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's
maybe
kind of
some guys. That, maybe that's some guys, but
that's inherent with this question. I mean, I think it's kind of too early to say that. And there's another question we can kind of hit on this with both of them, but the other question from Zach Smeg. Sorry about that if I said that wrong. First, he said, first, love a pod. Second, do you guys think we're reaching a point in Carlisle's tenure where he's in danger of losing the team again? So that kind of goes hand in hand. I'd say no. I mean, we're at a year and a half of his tenure. I think it's way too early for anything like this. I don't think the team has stopped listening to him. I don't think he's losing them. I think it's the issue is a more, I mean, we've kind of sat here and been very critical of Carlisle recently. So if you want to go back and listen to those for all of our big criticisms of him, you'll hear it. But I think it's more his coaching isn't the best in the league. And that's more of an issue with the team. It's not so much the players not listening to him. It's the system he's implementing.
Yeah. And I mean, like, by the way, you know, we've criticized Carlisle, but we try to also present, and this kind of leads into my answer to this question, is like, we try to present it in a way that's like, well, yeah, sure, maybe he's not the best, like you just said, but it's not like there's no guarantees. It's not easy to just change a coach mid-season. And, you know, given where the Ducks are at, kind of being in a win-now mode, win-now mentality, it looks weird to just fire a veteran coach, like, not even halfway through the season, right? And especially when your team's battling for a playoff spot. So, no, I don't think he's in danger of losing his job. I think that they're fully invested in seeing him win another one. Because, like, you know, if Carlisle does well, that means Murray picked the right guy, you know? So there's a vested interest. Look, I don't think he's the best coach in the league by any means, but I think that this team is fully committed to him. I don't think there's any chance they fire him unless things go extremely south. But
yeah,
it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we spent the whole last pod talking about who we wanted if he did. But yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
there's no way.
If you want all of our Carlisle thoughts, just check out the last pod because that's where we really, really went deep into it.
Yeah, and we even go into who we kind of would think could be or who could be good replacements, and that's our big coaching topic or big coaching pod.
Yeah.
So on to the next one. Brad Sanko asked us, do you think there's a chance that Murray goes out and gets a mid-level D-man on an expiring contract to help the bottom two pairs? And who do you and if so, who do you see them getting?
And then he added
with another question, or is there an internal fix? Give Larson or Pettersson a chance.
Yeah, I think that they'd probably go more internal solution than bring another guy in because they've already brought another guy in Beauchemin.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's just such a crowd for that third pairing that I think there's very little chance that they would do that. Now, if you want to talk about forwards, that's a different story. But for the blue line, I mean, part of the reason why they traded Sammy Vatanen is because they're so confident in their depth. So I don't see that happening.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that like you said, they brought in the demon on the expiring contract in Beauchemin, and even if you want to further that, I mean, that's Kevin Bieksa also. He's on an expiring contract, so that's kind of what he's here to do. So if they're kind of thinking in that mentality, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I think that if they do anything, they'll just kind of bring somebody up and slide him in. I mean, we can dream that maybe they'll try to get Erik Karlsson, but there's no way that's actually going to happen.
Zero chance.
I think the D is pretty set with where it's
they've
at.
They've got right enough now. Good. They've got enough good Swedes on the team. You don't need that many.
Can you ever have too many Swedes? Complete side note, real quick. It's really funny how the Ducks have transitioned from they used to be the team with all the Finns to now they're the team with all the Swedes.
That's true. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
Because they used to have, what was it, Niklas Hagman. They used to have Teemu. They used to have
Saku.
They used to have Tony Ludman and Sammy Vatanen was coming up. And it's just now it's all the Swedes. And it's just really interesting and funny.
It's a territorial war between Finland and Sweden that's just raging in Orange County right now.
Yep. All right. So Bonnie B at Literate Gal brings up question: do you have to be a believer to be a Ducks fan? Does it take patience like a Cubs fan to outlast the toxic tendencies to give up early on a team? I mean, do you want me to hit on this thing as the Ducks fan here?
Go for it. Yeah, go for it.
No, I think honestly, being a Ducks fan is really, really easy. I mean, they've been so good the last 10 years. Yeah, it sucks losing the playoffs like they have. And yeah, it sucks with them blowing these leads. But I mean, you compare us to even like, let's just go with the Edmonton Oilers. They hadn't made the playoffs for 10 years. And granted, they've had some really lucky drafts and all stuff. But they've had really bad mismanagement. And I'm not the biggest Bob Murray fan, but this team's always been a good spot. It's had great drafting. I believe that...
He's been objectively like better than the average GM, I'd say, in his tenure. Yeah.
And I think I saw something in the last 10 years that the Ducks are like second or third in playoff wins over that span. And like, it's rough that they haven't won a cup and they won't be remembered over the last 10 years of being that dominant in comparison to, I think the top are probably like Pittsburgh and Chicago. Mm-hmm. But you look at the past years, there's been 2 years that they haven't made the playoffs since the 06-07 or since the 05-06 season. Since the last lockout that wiped it out, they've only missed the playoff twice. And that's something that's really insane and something that kind of makes it easy to be a fan. And so it sucks.
Yeah, I've never gotten that vibe from Ducks fans where it's like, I feel like Ducks fans are just happy to be Ducks fans. And like, they've been really lucky that they've had really fun players to watch in the recent years, and they've had two runs to the Stanley Cup final, I guess three in like this century in the last 17 years. So like, I feel like it's been pretty good times for fans of the Ducks.
And I think just going into another sport briefly, but I'm an Angels fan, so I look back on the run that they had in the late 2000s where they were constantly winning the AL West and then constantly losing to the Boston Red Sox in the first round, which was always loads of fun. And
so they were the Dodgers of today, basically. Except for this year, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Angels at least 1-0-2.
Yeah, there you go.
But they were so good, and kind of you took it for granted being back then that they were going to make the playoffs and they were going to be great. And now we're almost 10 years later and they've made the playoffs like once or twice since then. And so you kind of look back and you're like, I was so greedy at the time wanting more and not just enjoying it as it was coming. So I think that we'll look back at Ducks fans on the last 10 years as being like, oh, we were really lucky with the teams we had. And even though, yes, it sucks how much they lost in the playoffs and how they constantly lost in game sevens, but they were still always there and they were still getting there and they had loads of regular season success. And so I think that there needs to be a level of appreciation for that.
Absolutely. And I mean, look, I mean, full disclosure, because obviously I'm a Habs fan, grew up a Habs fan, born in Montreal, but most of my childhood to like, I guess, teenage years were spent in Northern California Bay Area. So, you know, I've seen both sides of the Warriors. I'm now seeing both sides of the 49ers. And it's like, to me, fanhood, it's about enjoying when times are good. Just, you have to know to appreciate them. And as a Warriors fan now, you know, with all the success that we've had over these years, it makes all those lean years worth it. And it makes you realize like having special talents like Steph Curry around, you know, I'm going to be really, really sad when he retires, like basketball.
Or when he goes to the Lakers.
What? But
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there to bother you.
Basketball will never be the same for me. And like, I kind of sympathize with the Lakers fans who are always crying about Kobe being gone. Cause it's like, yeah, like when someone has that big of an impact, that's how you feel about it after. So I feel like it'll be weird even as a neutral party. It'll be weird for me when Getzlaff and Perry are eventually gone, because I mean, they've been the Anaheim Ducks for the last, you know, 15 years basically or more. And it's kind of like, it's always Anaheim Ducks, and then the next statement always starts with Perry and Getzlaff, you know, so appreciate it while it's here.
It's kind of interesting because, like, if you think back on kind of the history of the NHL, there's kind of like a pre-lockout and post-lockout era almost, and post-lockout, it's been Getzlaff and Perry, and that's kind of
With a little, like, Solani sprinkled
Solani,
in here and there.
Niedermeyer, and kind of that stuff. And, like, Solani was here for a big portion, but it was the transition from Getzlaff and Perry coming up to being the leaders on the team, Getzlaff becoming the captain, and now kind of he is the face of the franchise. I think that we'll look back, and I love Temu and I love Korea, but I think we're going to look back on this as being Getzlaff was the greatest player in franchise history. So let's just enjoy it.
Is that a debate?
I feel like there's going to be a debate about that when the time comes of Getzlaff being done.
Well, so you think, so it's between him and Solani? I feel like there's no one else.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be, I think Korea doesn't have that kind of, some people love him like me, there are still people that hate him. I think it's between Getzlaff and Solani, basically.
Jeez, that's a tough one. I would say that for Getzlaff to, man, this is so tough. I would say for Getzlaff to really go over the top, he'd have to win another one on his own. Because the year that they won, you know, Timo was still there. So it's like, well, I don't know how much credit either guy gets for that. But if Getzlaff kind of had his cup, so to speak, when there's no other, when Timo just isn't there, I feel like that probably puts him over the top. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I don't know if I'm even really considering that. I'm just kind of thinking about overall point totals, all that stuff.
But, you know, in people's minds, that it's all about rings, baby.
Yeah, and the thing is, Getzlaff was probably as important as Solani was in that run. I think if Getzlaff wins another cup, it's undoubtedly that he is without a doubt the best player in franchise history. But, I mean, if we're looking at stats right now, just pure points and that type of stuff, Getzlaff currently is the franchise leader in assists, and he's done it in almost 100 less games than Temu did. He's not really in the same realm in terms of goals, which is to be expected, but he's really not that far off in terms of points. So it's interesting. I think Getzlaff will probably eventually hold all the records at the end of the day, probably besides goals. I think Perry may catch Solani for that, but I think we'll look back, and I think Getzlaff will go down as probably the greatest player in franchise history.
I mean, I would agree, by the way. My take on this is Getzlaff. I mean, I'm a little biased because I never really got to see the best of Solani, so it's like maybe if I had seen him, my opinion would be different.
So good.
But, okay, so then I guess now we're totally, like, on tangent, but...
Yeah.
Where do you put Perry in all this? Is he like a number? Does he have a shot at number two?
I don't know.
It's tough, right?
It is. I don't think he will. I think it's hard. I think his assist totals won't get anywhere near Temu, and that's kind of going to be the issue. I think there's a chance he catches Temu in goals, maybe. He's got to score basically 100 more goals to catch Solani.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Which is possible.
I'm really not opinionated on this, but now I kind of am just looking at these stats. I mean, yeah, Perry doesn't get a ton of assists, but I don't know. It's tough because, I mean, I feel like Timo Solani is always going to be the more well-rounded player. But also, I mean, then you put Korea in there, and it's like we've been saying, the Ducks have been extremely blessed to have some of these guys.
100%.
Have been at the top of their. I mean, just some of the best of their peers, you know, for all those years. Because we're not just talking about, you know, they were so good, like, just internally. We're talking about guys who are some of the best players in the league at any given time.
I mean, we're talking about...
That's something to consider as well.
The Ducks are about to go into their 25th season, and they have four guys who have spent the majority of their careers with the team who probably should go into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I think that's for sure. I think Getzlaff's a Hall of Famer. I think Perry's probably a Hall of Famer, maybe not first ballot, but like I think he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, all I'll say is enjoy it, Ducks fans, because as a current fan, as a fan of the Canadians, I don't know, outside of Carey Price, that's really been the only constant. The Canadians haven't really had like a true superstar in a long time, and I love Max Pacioretty, I love PK Subban, and he's probably the closest to this, but the Canadians have not had like a top 5, top 10, top 15 player in the league, a skater in forever. I don't remember the last. I couldn't tell you. Like, was it John LeClair or something?
Would people consider Koivu to be that?
Mark Recchi? No. I mean, trust me, Saku Koivu was the first hockey player that I was like really a big fan of. And even he, I don't think I would have ever argued was like a top 15, top 25 player at any given. Maybe 1 year Kovalev sneaks into there. But even then, like, I don't know. I think it's got to be maybe Andrei Markov. But he's, like, not really a superstar, you know? So,
yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to turn this into a Habs pod. Although that will happen from time to time, by the way. We got another far question. Afield there. I don't even remember what the question was. So.
The question was basically about does it take patience to be a Ducks fan? I say no. It's easy to be a Ducks fan right now.
Yeah, no, just enjoy it. Like, that. Yeah, like, that's the thing. Just enjoy the fact that you have these great players, that you're in contention. There are some things I think to be legitimately frustrated by, but that happens with literally every team ever, so don't worry about it. All
right, another question from @Jimmy_Agro. Why do you think RC started Miller tonight and will presumably start Gibson on Saturday against the Pens, who he's not done well against?
Well, because, look, Gibson's played a ton of games, and, you know, Saturday's against his hometown team. He's a native Pittsburghian or whatever the name is, whatever the term is. So, yeah, I feel like that's what that is. I don't know.
Yeah, and, I mean, yeah, he hasn't played well there. I think he's probably – I can't remember, but I think he's played there twice and has lost both games, something along those lines, and hasn't looked that great doing it. But Gibson's been so good this year. I don't think you really can factor in playing at home is really going to bother him or come into his head.
Yeah.
I think it's more of just kind of a nod to him. I think – I was kind of surprised that Miller started tonight, seeing as it wasn't back-to-back, and I was expecting Gibson to play – tonight and against Pittsburgh, but it makes sense that they gave Gibson the day off. It's going to be good to get him rest. Playing Gibson every game except for back-to-backs, it will only get you so far. He's going to need rest to be good in the playoffs if they make
it. And like we said, especially that he's going up against his hometown team. And I mean, to use a fantasy football term, I mean, this season, I mean, maybe he hasn't played well against him in the past, but Gibson is matchup proof. Like, you can play him against anyone. It's not going to be a big deal. There was one question I really wanted to get to, and I don't know if we were going to go into it, partly because I don't know if you've read this, but
I have Bonnie it open B, right now.
At Literate Gal. Yes, okay. So you were going to maybe take us there anyway. But asking, what did we think of Brandon Montour's comments in Eric Stevens' latest OCR piece, Orange County Register? By the way, highly recommend reading Eric Stevens' stuff and checking out the OCR. It's just really constant Ducks news and information and, you know, feature pieces. Great stuff. But yeah, basically when asked today about, well, I don't know if it was today, but the story was published today about Montour's comments about being scratched, you know, kind of just your usual platitudes about surrounding, oh, I got scratched, blah, blah, blah. But a couple of things that stick out. So I'll just read it out loud here. So this is Montour speaking. His decision, right? His being Carlisle, ? You got to respect that. When you get back in, you just got to keep playing. Obviously, you want to prove him wrong, right? It's one of those. But I don't want to get away from what got me here and stuff like that, because he sits me a game. I'm not going to do anything to change my game. I'm just going to keep playing. I've been happy with where it's going. I'm going to keep playing the same way. Obviously, focus on the defensive aspect that he sees so it doesn't happen again. Yeah, it's his decision. He's the coach, so you got to go with that. That is not a rousing endorsement of being scratched.
I love it.
There's a lot of shade, I think. There's a lot of shade being thrown there. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I love it. I mean, it was the exact same thing I kind of thought. I was hoping, like, Vatanen last year was scratched at one point because he was, like, -3 or something a game the day before. And this was kind of a similar mentality. I believe Carlisle said it was because he was minus whatever he was against the Devils, so he sat him. And I just love that Montour kind of said, like, yes, basically screw you. I'm going to keep playing the way I'm playing. It's not like there's been a message sent that I need to change the way I play or that I played bad. Sometimes games just happen. And like, yes, we get mad at BX all the time for constantly being on the ice for mess ups and things like that. And can be critical of guys, but there are some games where things just won't go your way. Things are going to bounce off you. You won't be in good position. Weird things happen. And that could be what happened to Montour that night. Now, if it's continually happening to you like it does with Bieksa, then that's an issue and that's a trend. But I love this response from Montour, actually.
Yeah, I think, look, what's hilarious about this Montour kind of scenario is that Montour's like stats, his possession numbers haven't been good this season. So on one hand, you're like, oh, well, this is actually somewhat warranted. But at the same time, it's like, well, look, like, if we're going to go by that, which we're surely not, or at least Carlisle's surely not, then there are other much more glaring problems with a lot less offensive upside than Montour to scratch. So, yeah, like, mm-hmm. I wasn't a fan of it. I don't think it really taught him anything. He clearly doesn't give a rip about what Carlisle thought of him. I mean, just... I love that he said, my favorite part of that quote, actually this is a two-parter, is that he said, if I can find it here, I obviously focus on that defensive accent, that defensive aspect that he sees. It's like, yeah, like he didn't even say, yeah, I have to work on my defensive game. He said, yeah, I need to work on that thing that he pointed out, or like, I need to do that so that I don't get scratched again. Like, it's not even like, yeah, I have deficiencies as a player that I need to address. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to do this so, like, I don't get in trouble again, you know? And I love that he said, I'm not going to do anything to change my game. I feel like you can kind of misinterpret that. Like, he probably meant that as hockey players tend to do, where it's like, yeah, I got scratched, but, you know, I'm not going to let that change who I am or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not – I don't think he meant that – well, I don't think we can know that he meant that as kind of a shot at Carlisle. But even so, like, you can kind of sense an underlying frustration maybe. I don't know. And Carlisle is one of those guys who is known to not always get along with some of his more highly skilled players. So this shouldn't really come as a shock to anyone.
Yeah, definitely. I 100% agree with you. I don't know. I like that he's confident enough to say basically screw you. In public to the coach. That's more or less what he said.
He could have easily just said, well, you know, like, I was
bad.
You know, I was scratched, I was bad, it's on me to be better. Like, this is, you know, this is definitely a kind of a bit of a personality trait here with Montour. It's like, there are guys who will just be completely effusive and who will just say, you know, I gotta be better, like, blah, blah. But he, like, he didn't really, like, give any ground to Carlisle there, and he was probably pissed, honestly. Yeah. Like, he was probably, because he watches the games, he's playing in the games, he sees what we're seeing, and I don't think anyone in their right minds would think that Montour is a guy who deserves to be scratched just kind of out of the blue, you know?
Yeah, definitely. All right, Mixler chat. We got two questions. One we've kind of hit on a bunch, but wanted to just acknowledge it, and we can briefly kind of touch on it. With Waugh playing so good over the last couple games and Perry and Kessler coming back, who do you see going down? For me,
it's Kevin Waugh.
Yeah. I mean, most likely they're going to put Waugh down just because of waiver issues. I mean, maybe they keep him up. I mean, I can be hopeful. Kevin Waugh fan club gets to stay. but either that's going to happen. I think Dennis Rasmussen will probably go on waivers. The other thing is, that I could see happening is Walensky being sent down. Currently,
right.
The Ducks are carrying...
Keep extra forwards, yeah.
Yeah, currently the Ducks are carrying 8 defensemen and, what would it be, 13 forwards? Mm-hmm. Yeah, 8 defensemen, 13 forwards, 2 goalies, and that makes 23. So, yeah, that's currently what they're doing with their roster. So they could always send down Walensky to make it 7 defensemen and 14 forwards. And Walensky is waiver exempt also. And
right.
He will be waiver exempt for 56 more games or 2 more seasons. So he's got plenty of time.
Yeah, I mean, and we need to start playing. Instead of playing Where's Waldo, we should play Where's Corbin and Holzer, because I haven't seen him in a while. I don't know if he's on this team. I don't know if he's doing something else. Maybe he's in Germany. I don't know. Where is he? Like, is he still on this team?
Like a Pokemon, you're just going to see a wild Corbin and Holzer pop up on the fourth line.
yeah wild is one way to put it. Yeah, I don't know, because he's also still on this team, and I don't know what their plans are for him. I think he's on a two-way contract, so
I think
he's waiver eligible.
He's not waiver exempt.
Okay,
sorry.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
I said waiver exempt or waiver eligible with Walensky is waiver exempt.
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
Holzer's
yes.
Holzer's been around long enough, but he is on a one-way deal. Okay. I would like to...
Oh, I was thinking of his old contract then, probably.
Yeah. But anyway, one thing I want to clarify for people out there, just so they kind of know what we're talking about when we say one-way or two-way, because I've seen a lot of people kind of with confusion at times that two-way means they can be sent down with no issues. All one-way and two-way really means is that when they're in the minors, they make less, and they have a different salary for when they're in the minors.
Right. It's the waiver eligibility that actually matters.
Yeah. So a guy could be on a one-way contract, yet still be eligible for waivers.
Yeah.
Exempt from waivers. Exempt. Sorry.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, generally, a two-way deal usually means that you're waiver exempt.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That, so, like, they kind of go hand in hand. Maybe sometimes you'll see exceptions, but usually they're synonymous.
Yeah, but there are plenty of times where you'll see kind of the AHL plugs. They'll be on two-way deals but still need waivers, and they'll go on waivers at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, that's true. Did we want to get to the other question? Yep, I guess the Carlisle question. Yeah.
Does Carlisle pull a twist and start Miller on Saturday? No.
Well, they got a big win tonight, so maybe no. It's not happening.
Sorry, George. I don't see it happening.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think... Did we just get through all the questions? Or?
I believe we did. If anyone... Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay. I think we might be able to wrap it up here then. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I'm a little bit hungry. I could use a pizza.
Yeah, I'm actually quite hungry. And there might be some In-N-Out in my future. I don't know.
Ooh. I bet everyone quite loves hungry. Our pizza and In-N-Out plans.
yeah, it's we're really just living it up over here on the Anaheim Calling podcast. But yeah, so I think we're gonna wrap it up here. Good pod as always. You know, we got through the game, got a little bit into that, you know, discussed some I guess some little tangential existential Ducks fandom / rankings questions, and then got into questions. So thank you to everyone who left a question. It's really fun, gives us some material to work with. Especially on this week where, you know, the games are at 4 p.m. and Jake and I do indeed have jobs. And so sometimes you don't get to watch them as these games as intensely as we would like. But nevertheless, good pod. Thank you to everyone for asking questions. As always, if you want to get this show consistently into your telephone so that you can listen to it easily, go to iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, and subscribe there. The show will pop up right in your feed. And if you really enjoy the show on there, leave it a review and a rating. And what we're doing now is if you're a new subscriber or a new reviewer, if you're a Ducks fan, leave, you know, a little story about, like, I guess your favorite Ducks moment in history, that your favorite thing that happened or whatever the case may be. And we'll read it out loud on the pod and kind of share it. If you're not a Ducks fan, but you enjoy the pod, then, you know, you can just leave a comment saying in your review after having left it, saying, you know, maybe something that a suggestion for this Ducks team, or something that you've kind of noticed, and we'll kind of read it out loud and discuss
anything you want us to read on the pod. I'm not giving full license to say anything you want, and we'll read it. But
yeah. Okay, within reason, by the way. Don't go too crazy now. We're absolving ourselves of responsibility here if you go off the rails. So that good call by you, Jake. But yeah, and then SoundCloud. If you're not an iTunes person, you can follow us there so that we pop up right into your feed. If you enjoy the show, leave it a heart. Follow us there. Our SoundCloud base is kind of growing now. It seemed like before we would only get a lot of listens if we had this kind of like bombastic title. And now, like, you know, last night or the other night, we talked about like Henrik's homecoming and we got a bunch of listens. So it feels like the SoundCloud gang is growing. So thank you for that. And as always, AnaheimCalling.com, current home. And hopefully future home of Jake's current article talking about how goalies have really played a huge role in Anaheim's season. So I recommend checking that out. It definitely illustrates some issues and also, I guess, a strength for the Ducks this season, which has been the goaltending. That's at AnaheimCalling.com. If you want more articles of the like, at Anaheim Calling on Twitter. Jake is on Twitter at ReindeerGames91. I am on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. And that will do it for tonight's pod. We will catch you guys Saturday evening on Festivus. Saturday evening for the Ducks-Penguins game. So that'll be a lot of fun, and it'll be Christmas Eve's Eve. So Christmas coming up, and that's going to be a lot of fun. So talk to you soon.
Bye.